Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. This is Jacob. And we're just, I guess I'm just here because I have a real passion about college basketball. And I've always been obsessed with brackets every year and trying to predict the best bracket possible. And I know a perfect bracket, you know, there are a lot of variations out there. It's like something 1.2 quintillion or something, possible bracket variations. I get that it's kind of impossible to do, but it doesn't prevent the fact that it's something that I'm just driven to do every year, just to try to figure out college basketball. It's like a puzzle, trying to piece together, look at the trends, look at the analytics, the storylines, and try to put together the best bracket every year and enjoy the college basketball season along the way. So it's more just a fun project, and it's something that I wanted to kind of maybe just try to share with other people and do a podcast about. Because I do think that in some ways the NCAA tournament's more unpredictable than some people think, because, I mean, a lot of people, you know, it's hard to register how many different possible variations there are and how, like, even just a few upsets just shatter everyone's brackets. I also think it's sometimes more predictable than you think. It is a little bit hindsight 2020, but there are a lot of trends that can kind of help you predict the games along the way. Like, it's not, when people say there's whatever quintillion and number of variations, like, yeah, we know, but a lot of those variations are like a 16 seed winning the championship or the 15 seed winning the championship. So it's not, I feel like you can, if you really are careful, you can narrow it down to give yourself a better chance than you think. And I've had some success with brackets the past few years, obviously far from perfect. Anyway, I just wanted to just dive in and see if I could find any little trends or analytics that could help us just kind of give ourselves a better chance. And also just covering the college basketball season along the way, because even if the brackets don't work out, college basketball, I still love it. It's awesome. It's a lot of fun. So here we go. So to start things off, I wanted to look back at this past year's NCAA tournament, in particular some of the big upsets, because I didn't see any of these coming. Obviously, the Virginia-UMBC upset that literally no one saw coming, unless you're a UMBC alum, I suppose. Then the Arizona-Buffalo, the 13-4 game. Yeah, and then the Wichita-Marshall, another 13-4 upset. Starting with UMBC Virginia, I'm not going to pretend, even in hindsight, to try to like act like this is something that could be predictable. Going forward with your brackets, I feel like a 16 seed, you know, they open the door. 16 seed could be to 1 seed, but I feel like it's still going to be something that's very rare. And I don't know, it's possible that this is just an outlier, because that Virginia team was so dominant. I still feel like they were underrated even heading into the tournament, but maybe rightfully so, because they didn't have a ton of talent. Like, quote-unquote talent in terms of NBA talent. And the DeAndre Hunter injury obviously hurt things. But I still felt like they were underrated because the way they dominated and ran through the ACC. But anyway, if we look at UMBC, is there anything, like, we could take forward? And I can't see myself predicting a 16-seed upset, but is there anything that could have helped us predict this? Well, first off, just quickly looking at Virginia, they were a strange team in the sense that, you know, they were very defensive focused, and offensively, they were being led by Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy, who, Devin Hall as well, but two of arguably their primary ball handlers were sophomores that weren't necessarily, you know, high. Kyle Guy was and they were both really fairly highly recruited, but not kind of your stereotypical guys that talent wise. I'm not just saying because they're white as well, but, the other thing with UMBC is that, and you'll hear me on through this podcast reference KenPom.com a lot. It's an incredible service with a lot of great college basketball analytics. UMBC finished the season number 2 in luck by KenPom's metrics. And luck is basically defined as like deviation in win percentage between a team's actual record and their expected record. So the better a lucky team will end up having a better record than they should just because maybe they win a lot of close games. So you could argue that, oh, maybe this team's good at a highly lucky team is good at winning close games, or they just perform way better than expected. And the thing is with these KenPom metrics is that the NCAA tournament results did factor in to the final results. So obviously the fact that UMBC beat Virginia, like, that would send their luck like way up. But just one game isn't enough to completely throw things off. Like, for example, Xavier finished the season number 17 in luck. It's not like they – and you would think that – and they definitely underperformed in terms of, like, losing the round 32 to Florida State. So it's so basically UMBC was a lucky team even before that game. They were outperforming the way they should – like, individual games the way they should have. They had a knack for winning close games. And maybe that fact, that high luck indicator – could indicate that maybe there's something a little special about that team. Another thing about UMBC is that they're number 24, again, another KenPom metric, in minutes continuity, meaning that a team with a high minutes continuity basically brought back a lot of guys from last year, but more than that, also brought back a lot of minutes. The minutes were the same. So not only were a lot of the same guys back from last season, but the same guys that were playing last season were playing this season. And that's something that it's not always a great indicator of tournament success. For example, Wichita State was very high in minutes continuity this season, and they fell to Marshall, as we'll discuss. But again, I feel like that's an interesting indicator that if you could see, just look going into the tournament, who are kind of the top 25 minutes continuity teams? Is there any way that something special could happen here? UMBC, they beat Vermont on the road to a really good Vermont team that they beat in the conference championship game, the American East, to get to the tournament. And I was really high in Vermont. So a lot of times, right or wrong, my strategy is that I look at the favorites going into the conference tournament. If those favorites don't win, usually I'll think, okay, like those favorites would have given their conferences the best chance to pull an upset in the NCAA tournament. So like, oh, Vermont loses, okay. UMBC's not going to win. Like Vermont was their best American East team and they lost. So easy like pick for my bracket. But that obviously failed here, and it also failed with the Marshall game, when Marshall, Middle Tennessee was kind of the conference favorite, the team you would have thought would have had the best chance to be Cinderella, and they ended up losing. But basically, maybe I should have seen that, okay, UMBC beat Vermont, a team I really like. Is it a fluke? Maybe. Or is it just that a sign that, you know, they're really good and they're playing really, really good basketball? A few other things on UMBC. They were 44th in the country in three-point attempt percentage per KenPom, 40th in three-point percentage. Like, again, pretty good indicators. The three-point shot can be a great equalizer. Like, teams, you know, Virginia was a team that let teams shoot threes. They also defended the three well, but as some studies have shown, you know, a team, like, once the threes get up, it's kind of hard to fully control, obviously, whether the ball goes in. So like defensive three-point attempt percentage is the best metric. So even the whole year, I was like, okay, maybe Virginia, I mean, they're so good defensively, they defend the three well, but they could be, the fact that they do let up threes, you know, maybe they could be susceptible to a good three-point shooting team. And obviously, you know, if UMBC goes out and is hot, like that is a great recipe for an upset. So that's another thing I could have like looked at and seen, okay, maybe UMBC is a shot here. Another thing, they were a defensive strength team that, and this is something I'll discuss a little later, but I feel like they might have been able to kind of, they get hot on the offensive end. They just got hot from three and maybe were able to kind of combat Virginia's amazing defense that way. And then Virginia, a team that, you know, has been up and down on the offensive end, and the DeAndre Hunter injury definitely did not help things. But that kind of could have enabled them to just also just combat Virginia's offensive side of the ball. Okay, we're a defensive strength team. They're a little, you know, this team's missing a key player, and we're just going to shut down their offense. And in terms of going against their defense, you know, maybe we're not going to, like, dominate against them, but if we shoot, maybe we'll get hot and we'll hit some threes. I think that kind of helped. The last point on UMBC is that they had, you know, Jairus Lyles was their stud guard that kind of took things over for them, and he was one of seven upperclassmen guards in the NCAA tournament to average greater than 20 points per game on the season. He averaged just a hair over 20. And again, that's something that you would have thought that like could have been on my radar. I mean, probably will be for next season. Like 20 points per game, it's a subjective random metric, but just going into this tournament, if I could have looked at like see who's like a veteran guard. And, like, it could be any player, but guards tend to, you know, I mean, it's kind of a, it's not, I don't know, I feel like it is kind of backed up by statistical evidence that guards, they have the ball the most, and that they can really make a big impact in the NCAA tournament. But looking at upperclassmen guards who have that experience, averaging greater than 20 points per game that are studs, they could be the type of players that could potentially lead their team to an upset and be a Cinderella. So yeah, that's kind of a wrap on UMBC. I don't see myself picking 16 seeds in the future, but I would hope that, like, going forward, especially if a team kind of had some of these factors, these, like, things I could have noticed, like UMBC did, I would like to think that they'd at least be on my radar. And if I, even if I don't pick them, I could look back and see, okay, like, this team had a really high minutes continuity. They shot a lot of threes. They had a high luck going into the tournament. They had a stud guard. So that's a wrap on UMBC. Okay, so then for that's UMBC, and for the other two upsets, Buffalo taking down Arizona and Marshall taking down Wichita State, I was trying to see if anything, like, what could I take from those games going forward in the future? And the key I saw was that both Arizona and Wichita State had really poor defenses based on the adjusted defensive efficiency that KenPom does. So there were seven teams in the NCAA tournament among KenPom top 50 teams, so basically, like, teams that were basically nine seeds or better, roughly. So seven teams in the NCAA tournament among KenPom top 50 teams that had what I designated bad KenPom defenses. Basically, a defense worse than 70 overall in the country. So those teams were Wichita State, a 4 seed, Arizona, a 4 seed, Oklahoma, a 10 seed, NC State, a 9 seed, Davidson, a 12 seed, Arkansas, a 7 seed, and Nevada, a 7 seed. Now, if we look at those teams, Wichita lost, Arizona lost, Oklahoma lost, NC State lost, Davidson lost, Arkansas lost, and Nevada did win. Nevada actually got to the Sweet 16, and even though they had a poor KenPom defensive ranking. And now I looked a little bit, this is just one isolated season, so I looked back into previous years, and just the fact that you have a bad KenPom defensive ranking, I mean, doesn't mean that you're going to always lose in the first round. I mean, that's way too, that's simplifying things way too much. I mean, this year it was a good indicator. But anyway, I wanted to dive deep, and rather than focusing on kind of like the NC State, like the 10-9 seeds, I wanted to focus on, okay, these 2-4 seeds. Is there something here that could maybe indicate that a higher seed between, like, you know, roughly the 3-5 range, could this, or even higher seed, is there anything that could make them really prone to the upset? Is this poor defense making them really prone to the upset? Like, is it also, looking at the matchups, is there something that especially would have made these bad defensive teams really prone to an upset? And also with Nevada, like, why was their bad defense, what about their matchup could have maybe made their bad defense not as problematic for them? So that's what I wanted to look at here. Okay, so I wanted to focus on the good offense, bad defense teams. And I looked at all KenPom top 50 teams since 2002 with, they also had sub 75 KenPom defenses, or sub 70 actually. And so these are basically offensive strength teams. And there's a few theories I had going in. After looking at the Arizona Wichita State losses, I thought, okay, maybe these teams that are really offensive strength, bad defense, maybe they might be more prone to upsets. And the other thing I had was looking at a team like Nevada. And Nevada is not as high of a seed, maybe a mid-range seed as a 7. I thought, okay, maybe the fact that Nevada has a good offense and they played Cincinnati, a really good defensive strength team, maybe that means that a mid-range seed has a better chance of an upset if it attacks an opponent's strength. And now, like, work with me here, because it arguably is a little bit reaching, but I tested it out. So if you're a team like Nevada that's, like, let's say between 6 and, like, a 12 seed range, like, you're, like, probably going to be a high major team, maybe not a 12 seed, so let's say, like, 6 to 11, a team that's pretty good. And if your strength is probably good enough to combat a higher seed strength. So Nevada's offense, you know, Nevada going, like, is not as balanced as Cincinnati, but Nevada's offense, their strength, is good enough to combat Cincinnati's strength, because this is, like, a legit offensive team. They were, like, top 15, 20 in the country, maybe even higher. So if you could argue that for going into the game, you know, who's going to beat Cincinnati? Like, a team And Cincinnati is so good defensively. You might need a team, you could argue, that can neutralize their defense with a really strong offense. Then you could say, well, Nevada's defense is so bad, won't Cincinnati just like really score on them and score a ton of points? Well, that's not Cincinnati's strength. They're not that good of an offensive team. So like they're not built, they were not really built to capitalize on going against a poor defensive team like a really strong offensive team would. Obviously, like Cincinnati is going to score more points against a bad defensive team than a good one, but that's not where they're going to capitalize. They win games with their defense. And if Nevada, and so you could argue that for them, going against a really strong offensive team could neutralize that. And obviously, like if Nevada was going against a one seed that was a really strong offensive team, like you could argue that'd be a good matchup for Cincinnati because Cincinnati could take away their strength. But we're looking at upsets here. How could we predict an upset? And if we were going to say what kind of seven seed would have a chance to upset Cincinnati, you could argue, I think it like might, and this is my theory that I'll test, is that it might make sense that it would be a team that could kind of hit them in the mouth, neutralize their strength of their defense. And that's what Nevada could do with their offense. So yeah, we'll look into that. And the other theory I had that, okay, like if you're a team that's kind of a mid-range seed like Nevada, you're going to be good enough that your strength, if you're a really offensive heavy team, your strength is probably going to end up being good enough that it could combat those defensive strength teams. But what happens if you're like a 12 or 13 seed? What could your best chance be to upset a team? Now, my theory thought that, again, not in all cases, but maybe there's an edge I could get here, that whereas if you're a team like Nevada, your best bet would be to attack a team's strength because your strength is good enough to attack their strength, that maybe if you're a lower seed, you're unlikely to have a strength that's that good. There's a reason you're a 13 seed. So your best chance might be to attack a team's weakness. So basically, if you're a 13 or 14 seed that is an offensive strength team that's going just against Cincinnati, like in my mind, your offense is probably not going to be good enough to neutralize that defensive strength of Cincinnati. So what do? Maybe it would make sense that the way you neutralize is by attacking their weakness. That's all you got, because you're not good enough to play with their strength, but you could attack their weakness. And this is something I'll look at as well. But the game that immediately jumped to mind was the UMBC Virginia game. UMBC, a defensive strength team. They're not going to be able to stop a one seed's strength with their strength. It's not gonna neutralize. But UMBC was able to use their defense and go after Virginia's weakness, which is on the offensive end. That's how they were able to kind of neutralize them. And then obviously we talked about how on the offensive end, even though UMBC's strength is not offense, they were able to shoot a lot of threes, and that kind of gave their offense a boost. Going back to 2002, I looked at teams that were in this quote-unquote good offense, bad defensive category. And there were seven, five, and there was a few, not all of my findings like supported my theories, but just there were a few like things that stood out that were, oh, like that is in support. Now it's kind of really just narrowing it down. But among five seeds that were fit that category, seven out of seven lost in the first round. Teams that were really good offensively, but had a sub-70 KenPom defense. Among 10 seeds, 10 out of 12 lost in the first round that were these offensive strength teams. And the other thing that was, I was like, wow, like, okay, that's interesting, is that in 2012, remember both Missouri and Duke, Missouri fell to Norfolk State, Duke fell to Lehigh, both a 15 seed over two upsets. Both those teams, Missouri and Duke, fell into this category of the really offensive strength, poor defense teams. So I was like, and that was interesting because there's not that many teams that fall into this category, because a lot of these good teams are more balanced and don't have like a defense that is incredibly weak. But then I also looked at these kind of good O, bad D teams that overperformed in the tournament and upset teams. So I'm kind of trying to look at like the other Nevada hypotheticals, the teams like Nevada. And I looked at which teams did well, because not every team did well, but I was trying to look, okay, when these teams won, when these like kind of mid-range teams won, why did they win? Like, what type of team were they beating? Were they offensive strength beating defensive strength teams like I proposed? So there were 3 7 seeds that I found that kind of overperformed, kind of like Nevada. Nevada's included. 2 out of 3 of these quote-unquote Nevada teams beat defensive strength teams. Okay, check. That, like, works for what I was thinking. That works for my theory. There were 2 11 seeds that overperformed that fit into this category. 2 out of 2 beat defensive strength teams. There were 4 12 seeds that overperformed that fit in this category. 4 out of 4 beat defensive to also balance teams. So not all defensive, but none of them beat offensive strength teams. They all beat either defensive or fairly balanced teams. But there were 2 13 seeds I found that overperformed that fit into the good O bad D category. And 2 out of 2 of these teams beat not defensive, but offensive strength teams. And this goes with what I was saying with kind of the UMBC factor. Like, if you're a 12 seed, maybe you're good enough, maybe. And again, that was even fading as a 12 seed. You're good enough to beat, match strength with strength, beat a good offensive team and take on the good defensive team and upset a team. But once you get to the 13 seed and there's not one like line, like it gets blurred, you know. But once you get to kind of that 13 seed range or higher, your strength is not going to be good enough to combat their strength. So again, these 13 seeds attacked, used their good offenses, attacked and upset these teams by attacking their weak defenses because the teams they beat were offensive strength. So they were, so the 13 seeds were able to use their good offenses and attack their opponents' weaker defenses. And that's how they were able to pull those upsets. So it's interesting. It kind of like is not perfect at all, because the thing with all these stats and with this podcast is that no one factor is just going to like tell you how to predict all the tournament games. But the idea is I'm looking for little edges here in individual stats, and then we can kind of combine them all and see if we can throw them into the big cauldron and see what turns out and see if we can get something that can kind of give us more of an edge. Because again, it's just no one factor is just going to tell you how to predict the tournament game. But I feel like it all can help at least a little bit. So that's what we're doing here. So then I wanted to see, okay, I like talked about this whole good O, bad D like theory, but I want to see what happened when it would flip. If we looked at teams that were bad offensively and good defensively, and that was their, so they were defensive strength teams. I wanted to see if mid-range seeds that had good defenses would perform better by attacking the strength of good offense teams. So could it be like the reverse Nevada example? But in this case, so would like a 7 seed that had a good defense, was defensive strength, would they have a better odd of upsetting a 2 seed if they were playing an offensive strength team? So that's what I want to look at. And I also want to see, okay, again, would like the teams that are in the 13 seed range that are defensive strength, would they have a better chance of pulling an upset if they were attacking teams with weak offenses so they could use their strength to combat a team's weakness to upset? So that's what I wanted to look into, see if it kind of worked the other way. Okay, so we're looking at the good D, bad O teams. And again, based on my theory, I was hoping that I could find some mid-range teams that had success that were defensive strength that were beating offensive strength teams. Again, because they could fight fire with fire, use their strength, attack their strength. And again, I looked at teams in the mid-range that had success. Not all these teams had success. A lot of them didn't. But I was trying to see, okay, if I'm going to pick an upset, what type of team am I going to have this Cinderella team beating? So, okay, for 6 seeds, there was 1 6 seed, and the 6 seed that had overperformed beat an offensive strength team. Okay, check. That's good. Works for what I was looking for. There were 2 7 seeds since 2000 that fit in this good D, bad O category mid-range seed that overperformed. One of the 2 teams beat an offensive strength team, the other beat a balanced team. So it was okay. Not perfect, but it's not bad. It's still, you know, I'm not seeing any team here that beat a defensive strength team, because that would go against what I was thinking. There were 2 9 seeds that overperformed. 2 out of 2 of them beat balanced teams. Okay. Again, not perfect, but it's enough for me to keep going and just think that maybe I even have a little something here. 2 10 seeds. 2 out of 2 of those beat balanced to offensive strength teams, borderline balanced, leaning offensive. Okay, that's fine. I can work with that. 2 11 seeds, both of those beat balanced teams. So again, not exactly what I'm looking for, but I'm not seeing any of these teams with good defenses taking down defensive strength teams. I'm seeing, like, so far it's either balanced or they're taking down offensive strength teams. So we got four 12 seeds that overperformed. And finally, some good news for me, all four 12 seeds that overperformed took down offensive strength teams. And then we had one 13 seed overperform. And guess what? I worked out. The one 13 seed beat a defensive strength team. So the 13 seed that was really good defensively according to my theory, wasn't good enough to go against a really offensive strength team. Their strength was not good enough to combat that team's strength to neutralize them. So they had to go by attacking their weakness. So they were a good defensive strength team and beat a team that was not as good offensively. And kind of summarizing, again, it's very much kind of cherry picking the statistics, but when there's something that looks so good, I just like to find it. So when we just look at, regardless of opponent, when you just break down the good O, bad D teams that we looked at and the good D, bad O teams that were in, again, KenPom top 50, lower the teams with worse than 70 defenses. So for the good O, bad D five seeds, like I said earlier, all seven five seeds in this category suffered a first round loss. In the good D, bad O category, all 9 out of 11 five seeds suffered a first round loss. So it's kind of indicating that, I don't know, what did it, I mean, I could do a deeper dive on it, but if you're kind of, it seems like it pays to be balanced as a five seed if you're trying to avoid that 5-12 upset. Maybe it's because a lot of those 12 seeds can be a little underrated. They get stuck there, but those 12 seeds tend to be pretty good. And looking at the 10 seeds for good offensive, bad defensive teams, 10 out of 12, 10 seeds suffered a first round loss. And for good D, bad O, 10 of 13, 10 seeds suffered a first round loss. And again, the five seeds is more interesting than the 10 seeds, because I know we were looking more at, you could argue, okay, well, it's just about the matchup for the 10 seeds more than just like looking at them in a vacuum. But I thought it was interesting. So basically, as a takeaway, this evidence is far from proven. This was just some quick theorizing and quick stat checking that I was doing. But it could indicate that, okay, remember UMBC. There were some indicators that you could have used to maybe say that, okay, this team has a chance at something. There's something interesting about their team, their continuity, their stud scorer in Lyles. The fact that they were a defensive strength team as a higher seed, as we've talked about, going against Virginia, a team that wasn't as good offensively. The fact that they had really high minutes continuity, that was a positive factor in their direction. And then looking at the Wichita State and Arizona, we saw that, okay, maybe these defensive strength teams, or the offensive strength teams with really bad defenses, maybe that's a bad sign moving forward. And I guess I forgot to even mention, from this angle, if you look at who beat Wichita State and Arizona, both those teams were very offensive strength. Both of them were 13 seeds, so you could argue it goes against kind of my whole idea about, like, they were offensive strength teams going against defensive strength teams, because the question is, what am I saying, Jacob? Your theory still works here. Because if we look at Marshall and we look at Buffalo, those were two offensive strength teams, and they're in the 13 seed range. So based on what my logic has been this whole time, what's the type of team that they're going to be able to beat? They're not going to probably be able to neutralize offenses. They're probably not going to be able to fight strength with strength. So they would not do as well against defensive strength teams based on that logic. So they would want to go after the team's weakness. And in both cases, Arizona and Wichita State had poor defenses. Buffalo and Marshall had really strong offenses. So that matchup makes sense. It makes sense that I'm kind of just like figuring this out on the fly, but it does make sense what I was saying. I should have caught it earlier, that those teams would win that way. That would have been a good upset pick, because Marshall and Buffalo, strong offense. Arizona, Wichita State, poor defense. 13 seed, not going to be a good enough offense to neutralize a really good defensive team of a higher seed. So, yeah. And then lastly, just looking at going off of the good O, bad D thing, looking at Nevada, offensive strength team, again, able to beat Cincinnati, a defensive strength team, because they were their offense was good enough to neutralize it. They were a higher seed, and the stats will even show that their offense is really good, better than that of like Marshall, for example, or Buffalo. And then based on the other evidence that there wasn't a great example from this season, but if there was a Nevada-like team that was in the 7 seed range that was actually really defensive strength, they would probably have a better chance maybe against going against an offensive strength team, because the way they would win is neutralizing that factor there. And it's weird because you could say, again, it doesn't make complete sense, because you could say, okay, Nevada, why couldn't they just go against a bad defensive team? What, wouldn't they still just like score a lot of points against like a poor defensive 2 seed? Like, wouldn't they still like have a really good chance against a Wichita State or Arizona? Yeah, I get that. And like, that's what kind of, I feel like, might be, is arguably the flaw in this whole like theory. But I mean, going back, looking at the evidence, like, it at least leans in favor of what I was thinking. It's like, I'm not saying anything statistically significant or anything, but there's something there that is kind of seems to be consistent. And sometimes the thing is with some of this, like, analyzing, you don't always know why. You want to know why, and ultimately to explain it, you have to know why. But if you can just notice any trend, like, that's somewhere, and you just got to work with that. And again, it's all a big piece of a, it's one piece of a big puzzle. Throw it all into the cauldron. We're not making any picks just based on one thing here, but this is how it is. It's fun. I like looking for these trends. And yeah, well, hope everyone enjoyed it, and I'll see you next time.